Cheap Trick ending today's program from 1977's Cheap Trick. Hello, Kitties. Name of the song, Child, before that, from their 1968 self-titled record. Their version of You'll Never Walk Alone, epic take. They opted to end side one of that record with that. They didn't end their record with that. They ended side one with it. You had to then flip it over and listen to them some more. That's why they were the penultimate track in today's program, and Cheap Trick's Hello Kitties was the last. You forced my hand, child. Ooh, that sounds terrible. That sounds terrible. Joel Botelho from a fantastic triple LP collection on Born Bad Records called Kiosk d'Orphée, une épopée de l'autoproduction en France, 1973 to 1991 compilation. The track we heard was called Force, and my name is Scott, and I'm so happy you are here with me today, friends. I look forward to seeing you next week. Do stay tuned for Hardy White. He's next, right here on Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WXHM, WMFU in Mount Hope in New York City, and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, online at WFMU.org.
This is your old friend, Hardy White. And I have my old friend here, my banjo ukulele, from 1934. And I would love to play you now some of my favorite 1920s and 30s popular songs, many of them novelty songs. And here goes. No, I would never do that to you. Oh, my goodness. That's called Tiny Tim and Someone. And if you don't know who that was, back in the 1960s and 70s and 50s and 80s, there was a person called Tiny Tim. And he was a tall fella with long curly hair, and he played the ukulele. And he sang in a high falsetto. And then he sang sort of like 1920s songs, like Tiptoe Through the Tulips, which he made popular again. And people looked at it and said, is this a joke? Who is this odd-looking person up there playing what is in the running for the most annoying instrument? It isn't fully the most annoying instrument. Some instruments are only annoying when they pack, like harmonicas. Sometimes individually they're fine, and then you say, oh, I'm not putting down the harmonicats, but say, oh, it's a harmonica orchestra. Sometimes that doesn't work. Just because you can make a bass harmonica, don't necessarily do it. Oh, my goodness. Sometimes they've made instruments so large that people can't even play them. But I won't subject you to something that would make you confused about whether I was, I don't know how else to put it, sucking on purpose or by accident. And we encounter that so much in our lives. We read something and say, this is this parody? I don't even know anymore. Did Andy Kaufman ruin everything? Young people say, who's that? Who's Andy Kaufman? I remember a couple Halloweens ago, I went as Tony Clifton, who's this character that Andy Kaufman sometimes played, and sometimes it was Bob Zemuda, his writing partner. And the children don't always know that. That's like going to say, who are you supposed to be? Oh, I'm, you know, I'm the Toastmaster. What was his name? I forget now. Georgie Jessel. I'm Georgie Jessel. Look, see? Toastmaster General. I don't know who that is. But my grandfather, if he was here, he would say, I get it. I get it. He would say, I get that joke. That's what he would say. I would tell a joke. If I said, get that. I get that joke. And I couldn't laugh because of a medical condition, but he would acknowledge, I'm acknowledging the humor. I have friends like that that don't really laugh out loud, but they'll go, funny. Very, very funny. Like that. And I think that's enough. I don't need people to make monkey sounds. My goodness. If I was a comedian, I'd be so disconcerted if I got a really good laugh from a lot of people. Because it sounds identical to being attacked by, you know, primates or something, because we're so close. But you can just imagine that you're in the woods or something, you come out and there's just like Planet of the Apes or something, and they're all going, and they're laughing at you and they're going to eat you. And I feel that way about comedy club audiences. I've been in one and I don't mind that because I say, let's feast on someone who's lacks self-awareness. They just taste sweeter. But I don't want to be the one up there offering myself up. Say, taste the sweet flesh of my arrogance. Isn't it nice? Oh, it's like veal. Because what I'm asking, my lack of self-awareness and my, is it hubris, Huguenot? I think I'm better than I am. And that makes the people that would like to attack me feel better about themselves. Because they could say, hey, it's okay. Because this person deserves it. Because they need to be lowered a peg. Look up there, taking up that peg room. See, that's why do people need to be lowered a peg? Well, those pegs are for the longer coats. If you're hanging a short coat on a peg that's up there, that's for people who have long coats. So I deserve to have it. Maybe you don't. Why can't you use a lower peg if you have a short coat? So that's where we got that from, I think. Or the circus. Who knows, really, where we get language from. I just take it. It feels like everybody's using it like it was. You know, where did you get that exactly?
I found it.
I had a friend. I was at a friend's house, and they had on their deck a headstone, like an old one. It was like an old child's headstone from the, it was about 100 years old or something. And I said, where'd you get this? And I said, I found it. Where did you find it? Because I think I know where you found it. It was just laying on the ground, wasn't it? But I think it needs to be returned because it might be marking a grave. Or, who knows, you could have found it right there and we're the ones who were standing on a that was built on an old graveyard. Every duplex I've ever been in feels like that. So I think you're on a burial mounds.
Well, maybe, I don't know, it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I think so. Oh my goodness. I tell you what, if I had anything to warn you about, it would be that.
What?
Well, we're talking about the Tiny Tim phenomenon. That is like laughing at me, laughing with me. Who am I? What's your obligation to make me self-aware? Is that okay to... Because here's the thing. Part of me, I have in the past... made a living as, I don't want to call it a charlatan, but what's that thing where you oversell yourself because you really need the work? And I learned it from the Three Stooges, where they say, you know, do you guys do plumbing? And you go, yes, like that. Because it feels like a sin to turn down a job. Say, well, I'm not a hobo. So I think I'm going to go ahead and take this job I'm qualified for. Who's going to fault me? Right? What's his name? Algernon? Not Alger Hiss. What's the one who wrote, I'll think of his name in a minute. The one who wrote Ragged Dick. What a terrible name for a novel. That guy didn't have an editor.
I don't know. We should maybe rethink this. How about let's call it a life reconsidered or something. No, I won't stick with Ragged Dick.
Horatio Alger, is that his name? Yes, well, there you go. He should have changed his name anyway. Bless his heart. He could have done better as Dick Redneck or something. If you really want to use the dick. Listen, what about you, Hardy? Are you Tiny Tim or one of them, or Andy Kaufman? What if we found out Andy Kaufman wasn't funny? I mean, I thought he was, but like secretly, there was like a meta thing where he actually wasn't funny or whatever. But people were reacting and laughing. But at who? Like maybe there was a real, foreign man, and Andy Kaufman just stole his act. And Foreign Man used to play up there at one of the clubs up there in, what's that New York neighborhood? Sycamore Hill? Yep. Sycamore Hill. And he'd go up there and he'd watch Foreign Man do it, and they just stole his act. He started doing it. People say, look at that clever character he's doing. But it's just like Martin Short and Skip, what's his name? Skippy something. You know what I'm talking about? I'm just going to do an impression of somebody. Maybe I'm doing that. Oh, my goodness. So poor old Hardy White there sitting there down in Weewahitchka, Florida or something. Say, those characters up there doing my voice. My name is like Abel Poppers. Really, that's my given birth name. And I'm just pretending to be Hardy White. And really, I have a heavy New Jersey accent, and I don't know what that sounds like because I hear it all the time when I go up and see my friends at the station. I can't do it. I wish I could do voices, my goodness, like Robert Easton, and go around and say, hey, I'm gonna do all these voices here. I'm gonna take off on somebody from another country. Woo! Don't do that. I don't know. I love my own voice. You can talk whatever way you want. First of all, God doesn't drop you with an accent or something. You move to another country. People get a bad rap for doing that. They go and they live in another country and say, hey, I noticed that since you've been living in that other country, you have a bit of an accent, like it's an affectation or something. This country you've been living in for 25, 30 years, it's weird that you're talking like all your neighbors and friends. That's a bit weird that you don't, well, it's not weird at all, right? It's just, it's normal. And it's surprising if people retain it. If you retain it, sometimes it's maybe that's your identity, you know. Well, at work, they call me Tex. And so I can't really, I'd love to drop the accent. I've been here in New Jersey literally 50 years. I was born in Texas, but I'm 58. Something like that. So I don't want to talk like that anymore. Well, you can talk whatever you want. I said, I'm just going to do a robot voice. Darn it. You know? And I had seen someone did a, at church, they do, different plays, amateur theater. That's where most of us see it. So I saw Ubu Wah there, and somebody did it, and they did. They had the main King Ubu character speaking in this like Saturday Night Live Conehead staccato. What's that mean? Again, you're making Steve Allen Tonight Show references there, Hardy. I'm an old person now, I guess. I don't want to. I shouldn't have stopped. I stopped watching TV when it lost my interest, and that was a big mistake. I should have kept on it. You got to do it like research or something. So I always think that I could at any moment in my life be asked to write shows for the Tonight Show monologue. It might be in the future in 2025. You could get frozen, and you wake up, and they go, wake up, and go, what? And you go, quick, J-Bot's going to say, have you seen this? And then in the news, and then you got to say something. Go, I don't know. Give me a minute. And you have to go through the headlines and all that. Ugh. And then think of a joke. On short notice like that, it's always going to be a pun, usually, because I haven't done any research. So I can't make a sophisticated joke. It's just going to have to be some kind of bon damn mot that's really just a pun. Oh, my goodness, just phoning it in. I'm going to start phoning it in, I think. But then be really super high quality. So lately I've noticed Hardy's phoning it in, but it's really good. I guess it's like that. That's
That was the best show, I guess. It's like that a lot of times. Is they have phones. People come in and I'm phoning them. Like that, I gotta keep. I'm calling in. I'm pretending I am. I'm not really. I'd tell you if it was for real. I don't want to fool you like that. I'm a person calling in, but it's really not me. It isn't. But I'd like to do that sometimes. Take a call. I wonder what you'd ask me. Say, what's this all about? Something vague, I bet. What is it? Hey, Hardy. Hey, first time listener, long time listener. What is it all about? What do you 42 or something? I'd say some Douglas Adams reference and say, I read science fiction in the 80s and 70s as well. And boy, I enjoyed it. And then I stopped because I got hair on my chest and all. And I was more into that. But I've revisited sci-fi because of all the movies. Oh my goodness. Have you seen this? So much of it. Have you seen they're unfreezing people from the dead and making them write jokes? Have you seen that in the news? I'd like to be the news sometimes. I wonder what's worth telling you. I know I'd get played instantly. So I'm going to go. Now I have access to all the eyes and ears in the country. All right, Walter Cronkite. Now I'm going to tell them information that I think they need to know. All right. And then everything out of my mouth would be the result of me getting played by people who had interests. I know it would, because I feel like nobody's immune. So you know what you ought to tell them is this. Okay, gosh, that's true. Good point. And then, pop, 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 pop. Because I think it's all, well, I don't want to say it's all propaganda. And I'll tell you why. Because one time I was looking in to the sculptures of Franz Messerschmidt. Is that his name? I think. I'm going to do all this by memory. I got no notes. Or I'd have no memory as well. So some of it is going to be, I'm going to make up. All right. And also, I have this thing where I forget names and what I'm talking about and other things like that. But anyway, so Franz Messerschmidt made these really distinctive sculptures of faces. You might see them, and they look like they're taking a painful poop. Oh, they got stones or something or gas. Some of them look like maybe they're laughing hysterically. But they all look as if they were done to demonstrate some sort of facial madness or something. Someone carved these as a demonstration of some medical conditions or something. That's what they look like. But they were actually done by an artist. I was saying a madman artist. An artist who's a madman. That's why I was confused on the article, if you were wondering. But he's crazy. And I found out he's crazy by reading a book by Ernst Chris about art. And he was a psychologist from Austria, I believe, and lived and worked here in the United States as well, I believe. And he wrote this book, and he had this kind of theory that art and creativity was a type of temporary psychosis. And so for his example, he used a person who was demonstrably psychotic and not temporarily so. And he sort of analyzed him and everything, and so I found out about that, and I thought, this is all very interesting. And though the essays don't, you know, they strike me as being strange and inconsistent and assuming a lot based on no firsthand contact, I then got an interest in Ernst Christ's other work, and I found out that during the Great War of Two, he and other psychologists were recruited to do research on propaganda. And they found out some interesting things. And they looked into colleagues' research and things like that. And they found out that something kind of more dangerous than propaganda was anti-propaganda. And what is that? Well, that is the idea that you get people to believe that everything they hear is suspect, that everybody has ulterior motives, that everything is motivated by cynical gain, and so that everybody is lying. So then, when you've got people to believe that all information is propaganda, then they become weirdly susceptible to any idea. This is a strange phenomenon. So if you believe everything is if you believe nothing, you'll believe anything. I don't exactly know how this works exactly, other than the fact that I think what happens is that you start to self-generate ideas, that you become directed and then encouraged by your own self-delusion like that. Now, what are you saying? Is everything propaganda or not, Hardy? What do you mean? Well, I mean, everybody has a reason for telling you things, and all information exists because it's a product of communication. So, you know, everybody has an agenda. What it's a matter of is, are you getting the motives right? Or are you exaggerating or misinterpreting the motives? You know, what is it? And how do we make sure it's true? Well, I have a very difficult answer, and it is diet and exercise. What are you talking about? Oh, my goodness. You know, I meet a lot of people, and I love them, and I talk to them, and they tell me things they think are true and things that are true, and it's all mixed up, and they're all in a state of looking and searching for what is real and true. You can't stop. That's just the thing. Making a finite determination might feel liberating, but really it's the quest, it's the looking, it's the thinking. That's what is really going to open it up and open your eyes. Because, I think what truth is clear vision. Is it allowing something to wash over you? So the truth of a tree is me not having any expectations for the tree. And I just stand in front of it. And sometimes I put my face up on it. And then I think, well, the tree is probably thinking, what are you doing? And so then I back off a little bit. But then there's, creatures living in it. So I don't feel so bad. I don't think it's bad to hug trees necessarily. I can think of a lot of legitimate stretches that might require you wrapping yourself around some big thing like that. Oh, a poem is as lovely as a tree, is it? No. If you're torn between majoring in poetry or arbor something, that means tree in Latin, arbor something. Do that one. I think it's better to, you'll get the same or better feeling being with the actual trees. So I'm making one with words. No, you're not. Isn't that beautiful? Well, words are wonderful, and there are certain, they can be a recipe just the way that the DNA and the seed of a tree, they're called tree seeds. Is the information sort of no good without the dirt and poop and everything like that and decayed stuff that it sits in and water and then it makes the tree and everything like that? Words are the same way. Aren't they just DNA? So what I'm just like, whatever the plants do in the springtime, I'm spreading it all over like that. It's like, well, let's call it pollen for lack of a better word. I'm pollinating with these words. I've always been fascinated that the word for bees and words in Hebrew is very close. And so Deborah, something like that. Anyway, it sounds close to me.
No, it isn't.
I think it is. I read that one time and I'm sticking with it. And so I believe that words are like bees, and they can sting, or they can bring you honey, or walk on your stamen. Why would they do that? Because they think they're going to get something on their feet, and then take that and make a baby without your consent. That's really what they, I guess that's what they're doing, and making honey, and a lot of times making money off of it, because I see it on the jars of honey. I guess I don't know if the bees are getting a cut. That's not fair. Can you imagine someone stealing the walls of your house for its juice, and then that ends up in one of those super grocery stores, or maybe even one of the international ones? You go, wow, that's just like a whole This honey aisle is the size of our Kroger at home. But the bees aren't getting a cut. Same with I don't know if there's any creatures involved in hot sauce. Hot sauce would still, if peppers were sentient, and maybe they were even little fairy people that went, hello, I'm a hot pepper. People would still crush them and make sauce and eat them. I'm convinced. Because it's the hot pepper sauce releases endorphins. What's that? What are endorphins? They're a type of demon. So when the universe was created, the first thing that God made, and by I say God, is the whole corporation of oneness, made hormones came first. And then single carbon, no, not carbon, what was it? Oxygen, some atom, hydrogen, that's it. And then the key and the lock, which were invented together. That's the third thing in the universe. That one blew up, and then it re-exploded, and it's the one we're in. So how could that possibly be? I am a firm believer in the fact that if you can state it, you can. It's a universe. If you can say it, it exists. So isn't that I'm a modal realist. I believe that there's an infinite amount of universes, and they all exist. And just by describing something that I think is insane and far-fetched, it is describing a reality somewhere. Isn't that wonderful? No, I don't know. What if we're all one being in another dimension, but when it's sticking its toe in this one, it looks like it's a million different beings, but it's just we're all just the extremity of some one larger, hideous, destructive creature that smells like space garbage. That'd be neat. I don't know. It wouldn't change my life at all. That's the wonderful thing about that. And that's why we don't just tear down dorms. But there is big no-bong signs on the dorms. But I don't think that merely speculating about the crazy things that could constitute the real universe, whether that really affects our daily lives very much. People come up to me and they say, Hardy, my daily life is not affected by a lot of things like philosophy or economy or all those things. And highfalutin. And then a lot of times they'll wander away and they'll come back and they'll say, I wrote it down this time, Hardy. Here's the thing. I got real suffering and it's unaffected by speculating about space and all. Well, I think, yes. So what do I have that right now that can salve? What? Salve? Oh, you don't say the L. I know, but I said the L so you'd know what word I was saying, because you don't say the L so you didn't know. Salve your heart. Salve? Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know why they don't just say the F, because is salvation the same as salving? Put that salve on me. Rub that salve on my heart. That's what I'm trying to do. But I'm getting all tripped up on silent consonants. They shouldn't be there. No, they should. Bless them. They are a reminder that something used to be there. Like in French, they got that little hat goes on things if they used to have a S in them. So you say things like cote, like, you know, coast. Well, it used to have an S. That little hat goes on that O to remind you, coast. It also means rib, right? Intercostal. Same word, coast. And aisle, I-L-E, they put a little hat there because it used to have a S. Are you making it up? And no, actually, I'm not making that up. For once, I'm not. Little hat in French. Don't know what its name is. Somebody's writing it down furiously in the comments. I will help you, Hardy. I will be your unofficial producer-editor on the show. That's why I outsource it all to y'all, to the listeners. So you'll bless me so much by just being there. I'm so glad.
A lot of people, that's your job, say, what is it? What do you do for work? Well, listen, there's a fellow on the radio, and I don't always enjoy it, but he's a good-hearted one, and so I listen to him and support him. And just that's one of the things I do. It's sort of like charity, but not really. I think we both get something out of it because I feel like, oh, I'm helping somebody who needs it. He needs an audience. And I'm helping him because he needs an audience. So that's both of us win. I feel that way. Thank you so much. And my hope is that I give a little something back. I always want to give a little something back. People give me a gift, and before I even open it, a lot of times I'm going, it's yours. Keep it. I go, what? And I go, keep it. Because I want to give back something that's precious to you. You give me a gift, that means so much. What can I give you that's that equal? The same thing. So it's been misinterpreted because people go, I made you this. I did a picture of you, Hardy. I go, keep it. Keep it. You keep it. No, I guess that's not appropriate. Oh, bless you. I'm trying to make you laugh. Now I'm being silly on purpose. I would do that all the time if I was doing a stand-up act. I'm trying to make you laugh. I don't know whether you're laughing or not, but if you laugh and I'm not trying, I'm going to cry. And then you're going to laugh at that, thinking that I'm just pretending. Like Dick Shawn having a heart attack. Who's that, Artie? There was a comedian back in the day. He's in the movie, I got to get my fingers out, Mad Bad World. And he was also a stand-up comedian, and he died on stage of a heart attack. But he's such a clownster. Everybody thought he's faking. He's clutching his heart. What are you doing? I'm joking a little bit. And he died. I don't know if they had gotten help to him. I love that Andy Kaufman then faked a lady dying on stage for his stage show where he took everybody for milk and cookies and everything. I don't know how good that idea that is. I never know, you know, faking a medical emergency. I'm on the fence about that. So I got to think about it. I probably wouldn't just because I'm getting to the point where it's going to be real. So if I'm acting strange or I'm messing up my words, that's a stroke, not a bit. Hardy's doing Dada poetry. No, he isn't. He's trying to ask for water, but it's coming out. So immediately rush me there. I'm not going to be doing any. I will introduce it if I break into, see, now I'm all worried and self-conscious. Did you ever do that? You say, oh, I hope I'm speaking okay. Am I speaking okay? Oh, yeah. Because now I get nervous. There's stroke in my family. And terrifying to watch somebody with aphasia. Just absolutely terrifying. So I am at something I'm worried about. But then again, I don't say anything. And that's been pointed out. If I say, Hardy, you're not really using your words to convey information. Oh, no. It's like my words are like a box, but instead of packing things in it or sending things in it, a kitten is playing in it, or a child is imagining it's a spaceship. Vroom, I'm sailing across the universe in this thing that could be organizing my life Marie Kondo-like. Instead, I'm messing around in it, fritting around, diddly gobbledygook. I'm making up Appalachian words now. But I think it's worth it. Oh, my goodness. I had a word of revelation and knowledge the other day. And it was about... it was about Cain and Abel. And what their names really mean. And what they really represent. And I'll skip to the chase that Cain is supposed to kill Abel. That Abel must be out of the equation for you to live your life. And what is that? And that you must possess your own ability
to define yourself, to create yourself. You must put away that the emptiness of self-satisfaction, of having arrived, that the purpose must be something that's always out of grasp, but only to you. And I believe that. So we have to try to always be in the process of trying to possess something unpossessable. If you think you've gotten there, I think you are Havel. You are mist. You are vanity. You must strive. Say, well, Cain is cast out. Yes, all successful people leave and go on and look for opportunities in other towns. I think that's fine. They were my children, and say, I'm proud of Cain. If you take a look at Cain, the character in Kung Fu, David Carradine, has adopted the name of Cain for the character. He's cast out because he killed a man in China, and they had to leave. They make you leave. Not now, they don't. But they used to, I guess, make you leave. And he cast out, but he knew Kung Fu because he was in the Shaolin Temple, which is weird. I don't know that that's true. And one of his parents, excuse me, was a Westerner, which means that they played slide guitar and wore a cowboy hat. And like that. That's as opposed to a country in there. So I believe that's how it went. And he adopted Cain, so it was not a bad thing. He's the hero. He goes around doing good things. If it was the Abel show, Abel would have stayed in China and just was like, I'm just going to hunt. Like that. All the brothers in the Bible who just hunt and are self-satisfied are not the really, are not the ones that continue the line of searchers. They're not the ones who seek and wrestle. And that's what Jacob and Esau, same thing. Jacob becomes the God wrestler. So I say, if you got hairy arms and you like to hunt, bless your heart, that's fine. And you continue to do so. And also, I'm not interested in any venison. But thank you. My suggestion would be hunt smaller animals that you can do that you don't need to put the meat off on friends. Can you imagine how it was back in the day? Here's best. Are you practicing stand-up routine? Travel with me, if you will, back to the Stone Age times. And it might have gone something like this. It's, uh-oh, what? Here comes Og. What? Oh, well, it's just that he just come from mammoth hunting. Yeah? Well, he's going to try to push mammoth meat on me again. Really? Yeah, he's got like 5 tons of it or something like that. He's like, oh, you can make chili. I don't want mammoth chili. Like, just why don't you kill something smaller? There's all these little small little rabbit-sized creatures around it. Yeah? Why didn't he get one of them? Well, maybe they're not enough. Well, then get 3. But I don't understand. Just get the bigger and bigger creatures. They're going to be dragging all sorts of things in here soon. It's going to rot. All the carcasses are going to rot. We're living in the mammoth we killed. We have to. So that's my little. I don't know if people are still laughing at that point. It really depends on. You got to go when there's a drink special. And I don't know that a lot of open micers know this. You can't say, why are they laughing at mine? I said, well, they're not drunk enough. You know, you were on first and there's no drink special or something. You got to get people like your friends when they laugh at you. They've got to be out of their mind or otherwise they're not going to laugh. So you're only clever if people are massively disoriented and debilitated somehow, cognitively. Oh, that's a good thing. Thank you. That's why children's humor is so hard. You say, well, children are easy to make laugh. Well, they are and they aren't. They're kind of sober. And, you know, but they laugh at silly things. They do. This is true. But I mean, it's like, but that's not my wheelboat house. So when I try to make kids laugh, I try to make them laugh with, like, references, literary. I don't know what they've read, you know, and I haven't been keeping up with children's lit. So a lot of them is references to the Three Detectives, which I don't know if kids still read that today, but Alfred Hitchcock's Three I don't know what Alfred Hitchcock had zero to do with it, but I believe it was like Alfred Hitchcock's thing and mysteries. I wish I don't know whether it was Alfred Hitchcock was kind of the Roy Smek of that. Roy Smek, what a great guy. Do you know, I was when I had the here, let me give you some. Do you know who Roy Smek was? He was a great New Yorker, and he was called the Wizard of the Strings. And he, in the early days of film, he made one of the first sound movies is him playing the ukulele and with a soprano harmonica in his mouth, you know, like that. And but he was he played a bunch of different instruments. He played banjo. He played like lap steel and everything. He played steel guitar on some Hawaiian music and everything like that. And he did ukulele stuff, and he wrote books. You know, books published. There's Roy Smek, How to Play Ukulele, and all that kind of thing. Guitar. A lot of people took lessons from him in New York. I think he didn't die till the 80s or so. And he was like, he and Mel Bay are the two names that you see on these old music books. You say, I did Mel Bay method, so I did Roy Smek. So there, I don't know. We could probably play together. I think it's compatible. And there we are, off to the races, jamming like that. Well, he got his start, not on television, but on what they call, back in the circuit, the theater circuit, vaudeville days. And you'd go theater to theater in town, just like alt bands did. And you go, oh, where are you guys from? Athens. And then, but you'd have to go around, you know, to different towns of people to know who you were and then get on their college radio stations, blah, 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 sell albums, boom, on The Tonight Show. So that's how that worked. And I think it was a similar thing with the vaudeville. So now some of it translated to movies. Like, I got this fella plays ukulele very fast. Well, can we use him in our film? I don't know. So other than a novelty thing, I don't know that Roy was in a lot of movies, but he did a lot of great Hawaiian music with the slide and everything. And you're probably familiar with him. And I think Irwin has his head. Did you know that? I think he got his, I don't know why, but he has his head in a jar. And I think it's great. He's going to, Irwin, you got to do something with Roy Smek's head. We got to do something with it. I don't know whether it could be hooked up to a machine AI, you know, that was discussed or anything, and having all this great new ukulele music or the banjo ukulele. Now, the banjo ukulele, it's slightly more, mine is really from 1930, and it's a brand that you could have gotten at Montgomery Ward. Could you imagine going to Montgomery Ward now and getting a banjo ukulele? No. But then you could, and the reason that this one is so, it's so evil is because it's very much like one played by a fellow named George Formby. And you say, is that the furniture stripping guy? No. Ugh. This is a fella that did British sort of folk novelty music. When I'm cleaning windows, like that. Like, I'm not going to do more than that. But he did, I think that was a big song. George Harrison really admired and liked him, saying, well, that is my music. And he did. He was like, he was always cleaning windows or playing the banjo ukulele. I don't want to play it. It's an imperfect instrument, too. It doesn't know what it is. It doesn't have to. It's not my... You know what? Shut up, right? This doesn't sound very good, though. It has a resonator on it and everything. Some of them are just open-backed, but this one is very... this one has ambition, and it's got a resonator that's ginormous with wood and inlay on the back. It's really kind of cool. It was a cheapie at the time. So we're not interested in this.
I know you're not. You came over. You're lucky I'm not playing a comedy album.
Yeah, but you are just kind of talking for an hour.
Let me tell you something. You would hear more of that if we lived in a different culture.
We do on the podcast.
No, you don't even on the podcast. People are. I really do believe that we are captives of our expectations. That at some point we became convinced that the world had become fixed and that the way things are the way things should be.
I remember the first time I ever went on a I'd been on a college radio and everything, and the public radio station asked me, said, come by and do some fundraising for us and everything. You know how they come in? So I said, hey, we got, these are terrific shows. If you enjoy Car Talk, then you know that they aren't free, and we've got that kind of thing. So they called me down for that, said, come on out, Hardy. And I go, you sure? And when I got there, it was the strangest atmosphere that I've ever been in my life, because it felt as if everybody had sort of internalized a lot of limiting rules and strange conventions, and nobody had told anybody explicitly anything. Everybody had brought their own shackles from home. That's what it just seemed like. It just seemed like, I know how to do this. I know how to not say things, or I know how to speak the... I'm not accusing anybody of censorship, because it's unnecessary, benign censorship. It's the censorship of the expressive self. And it isn't even to avert anything that's offensive. The only thing that would be offensive about it is that people would be their quirky individual selves. So you don't even have to say anything that's... I don't want to ever say anything hurtful. I don't mind being oversensitive about not being hurtful. This goes beyond that. You know, it's strange to me. You pretend to be somebody else like that. And so I felt very frightened by it. And then I realized that if you go to other endeavors, it's that 1,000 times over. That it, at some... a radio station from some network or something that's got a lot riding on it, millions of dollars at stake, then that is their 10 million fold. For every dollar, there is a set of handcuffs on some set of neurons on your heart itself. And then you do the bidding. It's just absolutely impossible to get a job in a robot and then do something you want. You're in the robot now. So, well, can we make her go get me a coffee? You're in the robot. There's no, hello, help. You're in it. You're in a giant robot.
So, but can I?
Don't be in it. And then you can walk around, get your coffee and everything.
Well, nobody will hear my voice.
Do you see what's happening, though? No one is really hearing your voice. I think that about people that have large, big audiences. You know? You'll see this all the time. This is true for everyone. All sides of everything. Is that somebody will say something with a large audience. And they'll go, oh, that other side's been fried or skewered. But nothing's happened. It's all show, because they're not saying anything of substance. Isn't it amazing?
They really launched a salvo of nothingness.
So what are you, are you saying that something's, do you have something of more substance? I tell you what I've got. I got the ultimate substance. The other day, I was flipping YouTube channels. You know how they give you those little shorts? And I had, because I had watched Corey Feldman smack his mouth into the microphone, it came up him talking to Howie Mandel. And he said, I'm going to run for president someday soon. And Howie Mandel says, well, what can you bring that other candidates can't bring? And he said, love. And I thought, no, you can't. And what an empty word. You know, what we need is love. And now people say that, oh, Hardy, you're promoting love and everything. I'm not promoting anything more than the emptiness, the empty space in which love may exist. That's it. There's a old Chinese character on the grave of Yasujiro Ozu, and it's just moo, nothingness, emptiness, moo. All right? Did you ever notice that that's in the name of this station? WFM, WF moo. That's what it is. Emptiness. Nothing. It's a canvas. That's what I want to give all, is a wonderful canvas, an area, freedom, a space, space itself, the whole universe in which to create, to make possibilities where you are the creator. It is not a top-down process. We make our imaginations are applied. We can imagine better things. Could you imagine if we were to express it adequately? Oh, my friend, you're so valuable to me in theory. Let me say that again. You're so valuable to me in theory. In theory was the kind of jest part, but it's true. I didn't want to say you're so valuable because I don't know who's listening exactly. And then you might be somebody who's, out to get me or something. But potentially, see, I think we are wonderful allies, wonderful friends of family, at least temporarily, especially if you don't have to meet me. Oh, I think the reality of anybody is disappointing, isn't it? Don't meet your heroes. Don't meet your enemies. Don't meet people that you just see on TV. Don't meet character actors that you enjoy but whose name you don't exactly remember. Don't meet any of them. Or if you do meet them, just pretend you don't know who they are or have no expectations at all, because you've already interacted. And this interaction might not be really as real as the other one, because you're bringing something to it. Oh, how do we empty ourselves every day so that we can receive more? Well, we do it with the food. You've got no problem with that. Everybody who has a problem with temporariness doesn't really have a problem with pooping. So I'm going, I hate to eat because I eat, I just poop, I got to get more food. It's a vicious cycle. I've been opening a restaurant called the Vicious Poo Cycle. You know, just the most negative take on sustenance and nutrition. Or some people kind of get stuck up on the middle part, say it's not the eating or the pooing, it's what it does in our bodies. It's the nutrition, it's what we can get from it. But, you know, the whole damn thing is not just an experience, but it's a necessity and sustaining. That's why food is the ultimate analogy for what I stand for. This miracle of nutrition, because it's not permanent. We eat the sandwich. What's better? What do we all love? I don't know, sir. You say sandwich. Sandwich could be anything. So whatever your two favorite foods are, or your favorite, you know, it's one of your favorite foods between two pieces of your other favorite food. So We're going to eat that. It goes in you. It powers you to go on another day. You excrete it in some situation. Who knows? It could be one of those fabulous Tokyo restrooms, public restrooms, featured in Wim Wenders' Perfect Days. Some just fantastic, you might, who knows where you're going to drop it, but it could be in a lovely place. It could be in, you know, it's in on the bathroom at the Rock Club here in New Jersey. Oh, yikes. You know, I don't even think you're supposed to be in there. I know, I couldn't help it, I'm sick. So, but, you know, it could be nice, or you could have a gold, some people like to let it go on a gold toilet. So, if you had a gold toilet, I could not help myself, but I'd have to, what do you call it, upper deck it or something? I don't know. I'd just be so resentful because it just feels like, that feels like a little bit of a waste. But any other material is fine. I did it on a diamond, solid dime. It was the largest diamond in the world. It was the Bombay Sapphire. That's a gin. But it's like that. I don't know. One of them. Stop laughing at me. But it's a toilet. And we do that, and that is a miracle, and I want to do that. I want to bring every week, this is, I'm bringing part of myself to you, and I want you to eat me. You ate. That's a new expression. You ate. Did you eat? Who ate?
I ate. In what way?
You ate. Did you eat?
I think I ate, but I haven't eaten.
All right. Who wants to?
Should we? I don't know. I want to. You to ingest or take it in through your ears and this, and then you can do whatever you want with it.
Sometimes food doesn't have to be nutritious. You know, you can go to the circus and you can get candy floss, cotton candy, as they call it. And I got candy floss I got from a Yes album. Candy floss at candy apples. Or something like that. Anyway, Yes. Great. You should check this band out. But it doesn't have to be, and then it could be something very nutritious. Like, oh, I got the, you know, the grain bowl at Salads. But it doesn't have to be, you know. And then ultimately, the quality of the waste doesn't matter. Because it's all temporary. I'm not staying there permanently. Nothing is. And I guess that's, sometimes as artists, we get frustrated. So I'm not appreciated anymore. You got digested. So I say, I'm a piece of bread, I'm so great. You're not a piece of bread anymore, they already enjoyed you. Do you not want to be enjoyed? Who wants to be a stale donut? You'd rather be eaten and turned into a turd. Go back, and then another donut tree grows, and you can go the cycle all over again. And that's what we do weekly. And I think there is no bigger donut turd tree than WFMU. Moo. Emptiness. Nothingness. This whole station is wonderful. Nothing. And it is occupied by basically planets. We're all wonderful. Everybody looks like, who works there, looks like some object in space to me. A lot of times, yeah, bless them. And I, why is that, do you think? I don't know. I go up, because when I go up, I'm ready for a party. I don't work there, you know. So once a year, it's my vacation. I go up and everybody, I don't remember a lot. But it's, but everybody looks wonderful to me and just strange and mysterious. And I've made so many friends. I love it. Already, people have already died. I've been there so long. So I knew that would happen. I didn't know I'd lose so many listeners. I get close to people and then lose them. That's another level. But you put your heart out there. It's worth it, though, isn't it? It's worth it, I think.
That's got to be.
I know. The grief is the love pooping. I know that. It's all got to come out. Everything runs its course, doesn't it? One of us all leave the building first, right? Well, you or me. Someone will go to their reward in quotes, doing air quotes. So I'll either mourn you or you'll mourn me. But gosh, I hope you made a meal of this miracle nutrition right now. I can't believe I've listened to somebody talk for an hour. Somebody of obvious, you know, lower intellect than I talk for an hour, and I'm only a little bit bored or confused as I made it all the way through.
I feel like that way with any slow cinema thing. I go, I can't believe, oh my God, I'm gonna watch another Ozu movie. I'm so proud of myself. They're not even as slow as I've watched slower things than that. Man, there's some paint dry movies and people complain about them and go, no, have you ever got, you gotta, it takes a minute, but then you go right in there and oh boy, what a reward. You slow down for a movie sometimes. I'm telling you, slow down for any media, slow down for art. And that slow stuff is excellent, I must say. It is, you'll be rewarded. All the fast stuff, it seems like, that was great, but it's just cotton candy. You know, get into the substance, boy. This stuff is good. It's like, did you ever see one of those faker gurus or something? They'll eat a ribbon, and they'll excrete the ribbon, and it's still all the way through the system like that. They can floss like that. I believe R. Crumb's brother, Max, did that. Hey, I'm running out of time. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online worldwide, WFMU.org. Freeform radio, the way it was freed, formless. They say form, but it's free formless radio. And I want to be just the grand priestoid miracle bot of that for you. Say, Bishop Hardy, the leader of the Nothingness Squad. Shemp Jive, I love you.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
Your looks, or is it your way? Is it your body, girl, or your personality? Is it the time that you took giving to me? Or is it just God's gift from you to me, girl? I
I'm looking at you from a distance. So come on over, baby, get some. There's no reason to stop and wait now. Beautiful body, let's get that down. You know I'm looking while you playing games. The first step is giving your name. And we can take it there if you want to, babe. I ain't gon' stop you, girl, from doing what you do. Is it your looks? Or is it your ways? Is it your body, girl, or your personality? Is it the time that you took giving to me? Or is it just God's gift from you to me, girl? Is it your looks? Or is it your ways? Is it your body, girl, or your personality? Is it the time that you took giving to me? Or is it just God's gift from you to me, girl? Now that you know that I'm feeling you, baby, I'm your teacher and you earned an A. And yes, I got things for occasions, but that's step two, girl, just think about stages. Now that you know I'm feeling you, just tell me one thing, what you gonna do? Gonna do? Cause we can do things that you've never thought about. Remember, I'm your teacher, let me show you. Is it your looks? Or is it your ways? Is it your body, girl, or your personality? Is it the time that you took giving to me? Or is it just God's gift from you to me, girl? Is it your looks? Or is it your ways? Is it your body, girl, or your personality? Is it the time that you took giving to me? Or is it just God's gift from you to me, girl? Take it there, don't it on. Don't it on. If you wanna take it there, don't it on, don't it on. I'll take it there. Is it your looks? Or is it your ways? Is it your body, girl, or your personality? Is it the time that you took giving to me? Or is it just God's gift from you to me?